Welcome back to another episode of the Mac Rumor Show. Hartley, good afternoon, man. How's it going?
It's good. We have kind of got over that wave of products now. And so it's
boring.
Full steam ahead to the to the next lot of hardware.
Yeah, well, I mean, today we're going to be looking ahead quite a bit to September because there's been a lot of announcements, or not announcements, but a lot of rumors of iPhone 18, 18 Pro stuff. But before we get into all of that, just wanted to give a couple of reminders to those who might not know. We do have, I'm trying to figure out how to get video podcasts for this in the podcast app. Working on that. It's not abundantly clear still how to do that. For those of you who don't know, 26.4 that just rolled out this past week or last week supports podcasts, video podcasts. And we do have a video podcast. So if you want to see that, if you're a listener, you can go over to our YouTube channel and just search the Mac Rumor Show, subscribe. That would be super helpful. I think we've asked in the past, but it also really helps for ranking purposes. If you guys could leave a review or a rating, whatever, I think it's like 1 through 5 stars. Always helpful for that. And also podcast@macrumors.com to reach out to us if you have any questions or just want to say hey. But with that said, iPhone 18, we're already looking at it. Now, before we even start anything, on the design aspect, I am really into this red color option. The ones that we've had in our mock-ups, because it's like a maroonish red. I just want to throw that out there right now. We might as well start off with colors.
Oh, I think it looks really good. I think what stands out to me about these color option rumors this year is that it seems like they've been totally consistent about a red color. Pretty much every source that has spoken about this has corroborated this particular rumor, which is pretty unusual. Normally, there are a few color options floating around, and then as we get close to the date, certain ones seem to fall away. But I feel like we've maybe never been quite so certain about a color option at this stage. I mean, of course, it is still a rumor. We haven't seen anything. It could change. But I feel like the kind of level of certainty in the rumor community is very high about this color option.
I feel like this rumor happened immediately. Like, it was like iPhone Pretty 17 much, yeah. Pros were announced, and then it was like, here's the red option. We're like, wait, what? That's coming out next year. I was like, okay.
I think that Apple's learned a lot from the Cosmic Orange iPhone 17 Pro. And the iPhone 17 Pro color options took a really different direction. In previous years, we've been used to a far larger selection of colors, and certainly usually getting something like space gray, or we had natural titanium the past 2 years. But this year just gone, we only got 3 color options. And this is a far more reduced color palette. And yet the Cosmic Orange has been so popular, and I feel like very quickly has become extremely iconic. And I think that Apple has seen how much popularity and momentum a really bright, interesting color can gain. And I think that a lot of people really like that sort of thing because it's the best way to kind of feel like you've got a new iPhone straight away. You know, if you're coming, no matter what iPhone generation you're coming from, if you're coming from a silver model and then you go straight into a Cosmic Orange or indeed into this new red color, it couldn't really be more different and more eye-catching. And of course, it's the best way to signal to the whole world that you've got the latest iPhone, which a lot of people do care about.
I agree. I just looked it up to see because I was curious, and I don't know how accurate this is, but 40% of iPhone 17 sales seem to indicate that it goes to the Cosmic Orange. Just a fun little fact for all of you out there. And yeah, I have switched back to
that
silver.
That doesn't surprise me. In particular, I think it's driven a very large number of sales in China. So I think that Apple's hoping to kind of recreate the enthusiasm around Cosmic Orange, which I imagine will disappear because it won't really have the same effect anymore if it's still around for this generation. So there'll need to be something completely new. And I feel like what made Cosmic Orange so different was, you know, we had like the purple iPhone 14 and the Sierra Blue iPhone 13 Pro, but These were not overly engaging colors. I mean, not a huge amount of people wanted like a dark purple iPhone 14 Pro. It didn't scream new iPhone, but a really bright red in the same way that Cosmic Orange did really does say new iPhone very loudly. And it's great for marketing materials, makes it very recognizable in the ads. And, you know, we always like iPhone design changes, but we're very sensitive to those. And we notice little things like dynamic island instead of the notch, which average consumers may not be the first thing they notice. But if you bring along your iPhone in this bright new color, that's the first thing that tells you, yeah, that is the new iPhone.
Yeah. I've had a kid, like a 7-year-old kid, being like, oh, you got the new iPhone? Because they saw that it was orange and they just know. So yeah, it proves your point basically right there. What people won't notice is that it apparently is going to be thicker because it's 8.8 millimeters, which, I mean, currently we're at 8.75, so I don't think people are going to notice that. But it does look like it's going to come in at almost 7 grams more heavy in weight. That's a little surprising to me. We're going a little bit thicker and a little heavier. Is that room for more battery? What are we doing there?
I believe that this is to accommodate a larger battery. So we are expecting larger battery capacities with this generation. I think that Apple is trying to lean into the Pro name. I mean, when we first got the iPhone 11 Pro, it didn't really feel very Pro. There was nothing about it that was, I mean, I think it had like Pro RAW photography. It had the ultra wide camera, but there was not a huge amount about it that felt like a professional device. Whereas now, the camera system is so versatile. We have USB-C, and even the design of the device is so much more aggressive. And I think that Apple is more willing now for it to be this more utilitarian device that is thicker, providing a larger battery life. And this couldn't really be much more different to, I don't know, the iPhone 6, which had a terrible battery life and was this super thin design. But I think that this is all part of creating that separation in the lineup where you have the standard 17, which is thinner than the 17 Pro, and the iPhone Air. And these devices, in whatever guise they take, will still be around this year. The iPhone Air will remain on sale. We'll have the iPhone 17 alongside these 18 Pro models because the actual 18 is not coming out till the spring. So I think Apple is happy to let this device get thicker, heavier, touting that larger battery life to kind of really boost its Pro credentials.
How has your battery life been on the 17 Pro?
It's been outstanding. This is the best iPhone for battery life I have had by a really long way. I feel like the past two generations have taken a huge step up. My iPhone 15 Pro battery life was awful. It was absolutely terrible. I would frequently come home having been out of the house for maybe 6 or 7 hours and it would be dead. And there were occasions when my phone would die 10 minutes before I get home. And that was a serious problem. And that was one of the reasons why I upgraded to an iPhone 16 Pro. There was very little different on that device, but the battery life was important enough to do that. The leap with the iPhone 17 Pro has been even bigger. Now, when I take flights or I'm anticipating a really long day, every single time the iPhone 17 Pro gets me through that entire period. And if I leave with it fully charged for a long day, I know that it will always make it through to the end of the day. I have no battery anxiety anymore.
That's the reason why I never made the switch to the Pro until now, because I've always been worried about it. So I've always had the Pro Max, but it's felt like last year's Pro Max to me on this 17 Pro. So I should probably try. I have a 17 Pro Max. I do not have an 18. No one, don't worry.
This is where all these leaks and rumors have been coming from. You've just let the game out, Dan.
I've just been stealing. No. That's not even a funny joke. I do not have any inside info personally, just from what we gather. Anyways, I have a 17 Pro Max that we got on day one, but I never really touched it aside from, like, you know, testing it out a little bit here and there and seeing some of the other features. But really, I've just been gaming the 17 Pro this whole time, daily driving that device. I've never switched except for colors because I'm a lunatic. and went to this, maybe I'll become even crazier and go to my orange 18. I keep doing that. 17 Pro Max. I do not have an 18, I assure you.
If you keep saying it, eventually we'll believe you.
Mm-hmm. That's usually how it works. What about the translucent back glass? That's interesting.
So this room is a little bit strange.
I don't know if I buy it. Yeah.
There's something changing with the back glass, but it's one of two things that are very different. Either that little window that we have on the iPhone 17 Pro is getting translucent to show you the MagSafe magnets, the wireless charging coil, maybe through to the battery. Or it is going to be perfectly color matched to the color of the device to the point that you can't see it. You could only see its outline, which is maybe more believable. I actually quite like the contrasting color.
I was going to say, it's really growing on me. I mean, the silver obviously is the best looking one, but even the orange one, and I have not experienced the blue, but I agree. I actually think it's fine. It's kind of iconic now.
It looks best on the silver because of the high contrast. The blue, yeah. I think it looks the most variable. And the orange, it depends on the light you have it in. But it definitely does change. I think that this is why Apple wants to revisit that glass and change its appearance, because it does stand out quite a lot. So yeah. I wonder if that's part of the rationale here. As much as I would like the translucent back glass, I imagine it is probably just to achieve a more unified design. So they've just created glass that, with that matte texture, looks almost exactly the same as the anodized aluminium unibody.
That would be more believable rather than seeing the inside of the device. I don't think that's going to happen. I'm sorry to just shoot that down immediately, but if you guys were like, oh, I would rather do that, it's not going to happen. So don't even, I mean, I guess I don't have an 18, so I do not know. I cannot speak with that amount of confidence, but I feel like, when was the last time Apple did a fully translucent, was it the iMac from like the 90s or early 2000s?
I don't know. It's got to have been quite some time ago now.
I'm not saying they've never obviously have done it, so it's not a never say never moment, but I think
on the one hand, they wouldn't want to look like a nothing device, but at the same time, those designs are incredibly popular, and
they're
could be very different. And Apple's very proud of its engineering on this device, so it would not surprise me in that sense. And they do need to do something to refine this design this year, because this is basically going to look exactly the same as an iPhone 17 Pro. Of course, as with any iPhone generation, there will be small giveaways with the design. But I imagine if you buy a silver iPhone 18 Pro, it will look near indistinguishable from an iPhone 17 Pro, because the iPhone 17 Pro was such a large redesign. I mean, the design of the iPhone 16 Pro was the same as the 15 Pro, but just slightly bigger. In every other way, it was exactly the same. And we're pretty used to that. I mean, the same goes for the 13 Pro and 14 Pro, which pretty much look the same as the 12 Pro. And it's these little things like the notch getting smaller, the camera array getting larger, but things largely stay the same. And this is the second year of this design. So the rumor is that it will look the same. It's just going to be these small refinements, slightly thicker, some changes to that back glass, and then new color options.
By the way, for those curious, it was the iMac G3 that was the last product, discontinued in 2002. I mean, listen, I'm not saying that I wouldn't want something like that, because I would. That would be awesome. But I just can't see that happening. They do need to do something at some point, because this is a different design, obviously, than what we had in the last few years, but it's not that different. So, I mean, we do need to kind of step it up there in the design department to kind of keep trying to stand out. Nothing, obviously, just goes for broke. So, I mean, I don't think we need to go that far, but would you like to move on? There's a smaller dynamic island.
So that is, to me, what will be the biggest giveaway about which generation device you have if you don't get the red iPhone. So just like I mentioned, the iPhone, the main way you could tell the difference between an iPhone 13 Pro and a 12 Pro was because the 13 Pro had a smaller notch, just very slightly smaller, but noticeably so. And that speaker moved up to the top, and those true depth camera components were rearranged. It looks like that is happening again. So the dynamic island will be smaller on the iPhone 18 Pro. And again, if you are looking at the front of that device, especially if you've got like light mode enabled, it should be fairly noticeable that the size of that pill will get quite a bit smaller. And this is because it looks like Apple is moving the Face ID sensor under the display to the top left of the device. So this is part of the ongoing transition that really did start with the notch of reducing the presence of these components on the front of the device. And eventually this will continue. So the long-term rumor here is that Apple wants to get to an all-screen iPhone where all of those components are hidden under the display. And the original target for that was the 20th anniversary iPhone, which is next year's iPhone. So whether you want to call that the iPhone 19, whether you want to call that the iPhone 20, whatever they end up calling it, the anniversary iPhone, apparently that's what they're aiming for. Whether they make that or not, I don't know. I doubt it. But I think that the smaller dynamic island, at the very least, will be present on that device. And that is rumored to arrive on the iPhone 18 Pro.
I was going to say, I can't foresee next year having such a radical shift like that. If we're only getting this smaller breadcrumb this year, where it's just a reduced in size dynamic island, and then, oh, it's all gone. Everything's gone, especially with the Siri. But I know, go ahead.
It depends on the component. So they are moving the Face ID sensor under the display. So this is very similar to other implementations that we've seen. And there was even a leak this week. I mean, an apparent leak. We don't actually really know where this came from. It could be fake. Of a prototype iPhone 18 Pro with someone holding their iPhone flashlight over that area of the top left of the display. And you can see the cutout, supposedly, for the Face ID sensor. But this lines up with all the rumors. It lines up with all the confusion about a cutout on the top left of the display. That is where it will end up. That's where I put my money on that, that's what will happen. And as more of those components move under the display, eventually the dynamic island will just disappear. Because right now you have an ambient light sensor, a camera, and a dot projector. Well, if the dot projector moves under the display, you only need to move the ambient light sensor and the camera. Now, if they do that one per generation, then that would be fine. But I imagine that it's not too long before we get an under-display camera, considering that Samsung was shipping technology like that years ago.
Years ago, yeah. They did it with one of the folding phones. They put it under the display so that when you fully unfolded it, there was no cutout. I feel like that's still the case now. I don't know why I'm blanking on it. I don't remember what it looks like when you unfold it, but I feel like they continue to do that. No, I don't think there's a... Do you know?
I don't know.
I'm the guy who's used it, and I just can't, like, it's been second nature. It's been a few years. I'm pretty sure it's still under the display, or they completely removed that camera, one of the two, but I don't think that's the case. Speaking of cameras, we're expecting a pretty decent upgrade. I mean, the variable aperture for the main camera, that's huge, because that's going to enhance exposure and give you that better depth of field, the bokeh look that everybody goes for and craves. And you kind of already get that now, not just using portrait mode. I mean, that's kind of more of a processing software thing. Some of it's hardware. But if you've ever noticed, like, you get with the main camera and you get pretty close to a subject, the natural depth of field that you're getting, we're hoping that this sensor should improve that even more, right?
Yes. So it has a number of improvements. Samsung as well did actually ship a variable aperture years ago. I think it was the S20 or S21. And it removed the feature after a few years. And the reason they removed it wasn't because it wasn't a good feature. It was because it added too much thickness to the device and it was too expensive. It looks like Apple is now finding a way to make that sufficiently small, or I guess maybe they don't care because the iPhone 18 Pro will be so thick and we've got to that point now. And it doesn't really care about the price. It's finding a way to absorb that price or get it down. This should make the camera significantly more capable, especially in low light. and even I would imagine in situations where you actually have too much light and things are overexposed, that variable aperture will prevent you getting that kind of washed out look. So this will be versatile for far more different lighting conditions, which right now, for all the iPhone has pretty incredible image processing, you're stuck with that fixed hardware. There aren't moving components in there, right, other than sensor shift stabilization, but nothing else is physically moving. It seems like this would be a really significant change. And of course, this is a change that, again, over the coming years, can roll out to the other cameras on the device, starting with that main wide camera, just like how we got 48 megapixels first on that camera. And then one by one, it's trickled through to the others.
I mean, it's not quite the same thing. We are expecting a larger aperture on the telephoto camera. I mean, the larger you go, the more light you can let in, which is always helpful. What other improvements are you excited about with the 18 and the camera?
There have been some rumors about a 24 megapixel front-facing camera, which I think
would be a good improvement. That was supposed to be for this past year.
Yeah, so that all those rumors got a little bit confused because we heard rumor after rumor about a 24 megapixel front-facing camera, and then when it emerged, it was actually 18 megapixels.
Right.
And we were a little bit confused by that. And it now supports center stage, and it has that square sensor, so that was a huge upgrade. I think we could still go further and get it to 24 megapixels. And there have been some specific rumors about that. So that is one thing I would be excited about. The other one is the simplified camera control. So it looks like the camera control has not been the most popular feature.
Oh my gosh, what?
Yeah, I'm shocked.
Hold on. What? What are you even saying right now?
It's totally unexpected.
How many comments are we going to get of people saying they love camera control? I don't want to hear it. You're lying to me if you tell me you like camera control. I will take this to my grave. There's no one out there who's like, yeah, no, I use it all the time. It's great for one thing, and we all know what that is.
Yeah, opening the camera app.
Exactly.
And that is what
I use
for
everything else.
I use it every day. Every day. And it is absolutely worthwhile having on my device for that feature.
Sure.
But I never take a picture with it because it is worse than touching the display. And I have disabled all of the capacitive capabilities. So the rumor would suggest that Apple knows this. And this is significantly how people are actually using the camera control. I think on this time, we are not alone in the way that we're using our devices because it looks like Apple agrees. Apple is going to remove the capacitive capabilities of the camera control. So those swiping gestures will just be completely removed.
How are they going to market
instead
that?
It will be purely pressure sensitive. I imagine that they probably won't market it very much. They will just leave this out there for people in the tech community to point out in our product comparisons, and the camera control this year doesn't have a capacitive sensor for gestures, but no one's really going to care because the feature is still on there. It will still let you take pictures. It will still let you lock exposure. That feature will remain, so it will still work like a DSLR, and it will still let you launch the camera app. So the whole feature isn't disappearing, but they're just leaning into the things that people actually want it to do rather than these gestures that definitely get in the way and always have done.
Maybe it might actually would be useful if the button did mimic exactly how it works on an actual camera where it like can be half pressed and you get that physical feedback of like, because it doesn't work that well, obviously, with the capacitive nature.
Yeah, you get like a little bump from the haptic engine to tell you you're halfway, but it's not intuitive at all.
Yeah. Like, I'm not saying make an ugly giant, like I'm looking at my camera right now with the ugly circle on top. It's not ugly on a camera, but on a phone, it would be terrible. But if you can do something that still mimics that
feedback, just needs to be a two-stop button, just an actual physical button with two stops.
Then maybe I'd use that more, you know? I don't know. Probably won't, but.
And this will apparently also be part of a cost-saving measure because right now those capacitive components cost Apple a lot of money. So if they can simplify that, I think they can deliver a slightly more coherent feature and save some money. But I've never been a fan of those gestures. It looks like most people feel the same.
It also needs to be moved, because I think the argument that we made was like, okay, if we put it like, if you're taking photos like this, which is how you should be taking photos, but we don't because as a society, everything is vertical. So it should even still be like right here. That's more natural for it to be here as opposed to camera control. If you guys are watching, by the way, this is a great reason to go subscribe to the YouTube channel so you can see me demonstrate this in incredible blurriness. If you put your finger right here, this is where camera control is. This is not a natural looking, like I'll blur my, there we go. This is not natural. It needs to be right there. But then when you go vertical, it's even worse. Like I would say vertical, it would need to be like right there as opposed to down here. But that's just my hand. My hand is not the model for everybody else's, but I would imagine it's close just, enough.
I maintain that the button is too hard to press. As in there's too much resistance on the button to actually make it useful for taking photos, because touching the display, I've said this so many times, and every single time I say it on the podcast, I always feel like an idiot for saying it. And I feel like people never understand the point I'm making. But I'll try one more time, which is that touching the display does not adjust or jog the phone. So your hand can remain steadier because you're just touching the glass. And it's faster to do that. But if you have to press quite hard on the side of the device and there's quite a lot of resistance, you end up kind of shaking the phone just a tiny little bit when you do that. And it expends more effort to do that. Like I've got to consciously click that in when I can just touch the glass, and it's so much easier.
I agree with you in that sense that it's probably harder to do that. How do I phrase this? Because you're not wrong.
It's like if I
the
use
reason
my
why
device,
you're able the reason
the problem
the
for
reason,
me is
yeah,
if
you're
I,
doing
if I'm up here and I've got my finger on the camera control, my thumb is already in front of where it would be anyway.
Right, but
to
adjusting
touch the display.
I don't think I'm moving the phone when I'm holding it in landscape orientation to adjust camera control. I think this is fine. It's when you do one-handed like this, then to try to move it, then I feel like I'm jostling it around. So I'll agree with you in only one specific orientation. That makes a lot of sense. Because to keep it steady like this and to touch the stuff on the screen, my hand's keeping it steady here and I'm using my other hand. That's not getting in the way of, you know, trying to be calm and steady and take the photo. But if for some reason when we're holding it with one hand and trying to use camera control, we always want to use our thumb in the right hand that we're using it. So maybe we try, yeah, you can't even do it the other way, like where you try to use your other hand for more stability.
I mean, I've tried to do that, but it's just there's just too much resistance on the button. So I'm like straining my fingers to take the picture. And it's just
and
awkward
by the way,
when
by the time you get it all set up, whatever it is you're trying to take a picture of is gone.
Exactly. And you've got that big circular button on the display just to go right ahead and tap, and you can take your picture. So it's even that I don't use. I just use it as an action button. And I imagine that some sort of pro users who do use their iPhone for more serious photography do quite like the two-stop feature for locking in exposure and focus. That seems worthwhile. And maybe it's just me being crazy with this particular gripe I have with the camera control. But I think that whatever Apple is going for here makes a lot of sense. And to some extent, at least, lines up with our criticisms of the feature and certainly what I've read online.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. We've been bitching about the camera control for quite some time now. He could probably move on. But I just would love to hear from all of you. Though I feel like we're going to get trolls telling us they use camera control. But if you can take it seriously for 5 seconds and just really tell us if you actually use it, because I am curious. I feel like most people agree that they do not use camera control for at least the way it's supposed to be used or the way Apple intended. I mean, we all use it to probably launch the camera, which is what it's most used for. I've seen people comment saying that they just disabled it entirely, like doesn't do anything. And that's fine.
That's a bit of a waste.
I mean, I agree. It is a waste, but we had life before camera control and we were just fine. I just feel like they should have just moved the power button down or the side button and just make it all into one. It just makes the most sense. What else is that button used for? Siri, move it to something else. We're going to have Siri everywhere.
I don't know. I don't think it's a bad thing to have more buttons on the device that you can use. I mean, it's effectively, it's just another action button, which I actually rarely use my action button, but I use my camera control all the time to launch the camera app.
I don't know. I'm going to be grumpy about it. A20 chip doesn't sound super exciting to me. Every year we talk about new chips, every year I do not care because it all feels the same to me.
Well, there are some reasons to be excited for the A20.
Go ahead. So make me, pitch it to me.
The A20 is going to be Apple's first 2-nanometer chip. So that is moving to a whole new fabrication process from TSMC, Apple's chip manufacturer. And we've been on 3-nanometer chips for several years now, going back to, I think it's the A17 Pro. So through the A17, A18, and A19, that has all been 3-nanometer. And before that, I think we had one chip that was supposedly 4-nanometer, and then we had 3 generations of 5-nanometer. So this should be a bigger leap than we've had the past few years, because this is a whole new process that is on a smaller scale, and that will lead to yet more performance and efficiency improvements. But while maybe we don't worry so much about our iPhone's performance nowadays, efficiency still really matters, and it matters for things like battery life, because if you are ever using your iPhone for a prolonged period, I don't know, maybe you're traveling and you're using it for a few hours at a time, it will eat through the battery, and that is the chip primarily along with the display that is doing that. So it looks like the A20 will be about 30% more efficient, which is a big jump. The A19 is already a very efficient chip, so that is a great improvement. The other change with the architecture is that the RAM is going to be integrated directly into the chip. So at the moment, Apple talks about unified memory, and it sits away from the CPU and the GPU, but now it will actually be directly tied into the same part of the SoC. So what that enables is more efficiency, which should help prolong battery life. It should mean that it's faster, and also it reduces the overall footprint of that circuitry, which frees up more internal space. So that's a pretty significant bump. I would be shocked if there were not further optimizations for on-device AI. We got those neural accelerators on the GPU last year. I imagine that will go even further this year. Maybe there'll be a more powerful neural engine. And
is there a concert happening behind you? What's going on?
No, I think there's some construction going on.
It sounds like somebody's singing. You have Christmas carolers in April? What is happening?
No, I mean, I wish it sounded like Christmas carols for me. It actually sounds quite terrible, but there we go.
Okay, anyways, sorry to interrupt.
It's the sound of the A20 chip screaming past.
No, burning your insides because of how friggin' hot it's going to be from all that nasty performance we're going to get. Listen, it is great. This is probably the most important thing from a technological advancement are these new chips, but I'm just trying to like put my average consumer hat on. No one knows what chip generation we're on that doesn't follow this closely.
Remember, these chips form the basis of Apple Silicon in the Mac.
Yeah, they're super important.
This gives us a hint of what we can expect from the redesigned MacBook Pro or MacBook Ultra, as it's now rumored to be called at the end of the year. So that is a device that I'm hoping to buy. That is a device that I think will be incredibly popular, and it starts here. So we're going to get these 2-nanometer chips across the board before long. So this will be the first time we see it, and I think that's pretty exciting.
I mean, listen, like I said, I'm excited about what they do, but once the phone's in my hand and I'm doing my normal day-to-day stuff, I am not thinking, thank God I have the A20 chip in here. I just don't know that I'd be able to scroll Instagram fast enough, you know?
But that proves it's doing its job.
That's all, I mean, it's always doing its job. Apple, that's the best part about these products. I'm not trying to be a fanboy here, but like, and most of these phones do a good job, even if it's a non-Apple phone. But like back in the day, it's like, yeah, this is why people bought this stuff, because the old adage, like, it just works. And it still does just work. Now, I know that a lot of people who are haters will come in and be like, look at all these bugs and look at all this terrible things where it doesn't just work. But I don't know. I either just must be really chill about my phone and bugs, or I just really don't pay attention to it, or I don't care. I just don't see as many bugs as people often complain about. Or when they do, it's like, it's not enough to piss me off that much that I got to take it to the internet and like really post about it. I don't know. I know you've been frustrated with some bugs.
They have been there.
I'm not saying it varies.
I don't know that lately anything has been bothering me in particular. And I also feel like, especially when you use your devices a lot, even when you encounter bugs, you start just finding workarounds to it and just start living with it to the point that you even forget what the bug was in the first place.
Right. I think, and that's not good, but that is kind of true. Like there is a way to like, oh, well, that just stops working. I'll just figure out a different way to do it. And it's a minor inconvenience for a second, but like what's the bug that just got the typing too fast and like your keyboard lags behind, doesn't catch up, or it's like super inaccurate. I've just been dealing with that for years. But like so now people are like, oh, is it improved? I'm like, I don't know. I can't tell you because it's so not an issue for me anymore because I've just figured out how to work around it. I just don't type as fast. I don't know. That's bad. We shouldn't really be excusing that, but.
No, I totally agree.
I don't know.
It just depends.
C2 modem.
Right?
And let's just move on down the list. C2 modem. What do we got with that?
C2 modem.
Good?
No. C2 modem. So this is the first time that we're going to get Apple's custom modems across the lineup. So the iPhone 17 Pro has the still using a Qualcomm modem. The reason for that, the main reason, is because Apple's still been rolling out its C1 and C1X modems. We got it first in the iPhone 16e, then in the iPhone Air, and then in the iPhone 17e. And we've also had it in the iPad as well, in the cellular versions of that. Part of that is because Apple's still testing that technology and scaling it. But a major reason is because they don't support millimeter wave 5G. And right now, Qualcomm is the best option for that. So the C2 modem, not only will it be across the lineup for the first time, and there'll be no iPhone with a Qualcomm modem, so this will be entirely transitioned now to Apple's custom modem technology, but it will support millimeter wave 5G. And another rumored feature is 5G via satellite, which will be integrated into the C2, supposedly. And it's not entirely clear how that will work, how far that will be related to the emergency SOS features. But I imagine that this will give you some amount of connectivity to do things like, I don't know, load maps or access certain features that would be useful in emergency scenarios. And that is integrated into this modem. So while that's not going to drive upgrades, it is significant because that should lead to efficiency improvements quite significantly because the Qualcomm's modems always have burned through quite a lot of battery life, but Apple's C-series modems are extremely efficient.
I feel like Apple can just go ahead and start putting these in everything. I don't know. Maybe a MacBook one day, for the love of God.
I think that will happen. I think the long-term direction here is that eventually the modem and the N1 chip or N2 chip, as is rumored for this device, we don't really know very much about it, but apparently there's going to be a new generation. Presumably that will move up as we get new Bluetooth and Wi-Fi specifications. But eventually these chips will kind of merge. It would make sense that you need to have a Bluetooth and Wi-Fi on basically any device that you're going to put an A-series chip in. So why not integrate that N-series chip with the A-series chip? And actually have that be the same component. That would simplify manufacturing. It would help minimize space. It would increase economies of scale. And eventually the same with the modem because, I mean, we have cellular iPads. Obviously, iPhones have cellular. And we've been hearing rumors about cellular MacBooks for years. So for this to eventually move to be just one chip, I think makes a lot of sense. And would be massively more efficient than what we have been used to. And surely that's got to be the direction of travel because Apple used different components in years gone by. It used a Qualcomm modem or a Broadcom modem in the Mac alongside an Intel chip. None of those components are Apple components. They've got to be separate. But if everything is made by Apple, it enables them to actually do things completely differently and integrate that all into one chip.
Yeah. I mean, these chips are just so good now that I don't understand the hesitation by Apple to just kind of jump and go forward. Is it a contract issue with Qualcomm that they couldn't just start doing this? Or were they really trying to just make sure that their most premium devices didn't fall behind because their modems weren't up to snuff? You know, is that pretty much what it was? Because I just feel
I mean, this was a brand new thing for Apple to do. I mean, it acquired Intel's modem business years ago, which is the team that was working on developing the C1. Then to put that into quite a small scale device with the iPhone 16e was a good opportunity to give it a test run, because you can imagine if there were problems with this hardware, if it did not perform as well as expected, if there were problems with connectivity and speeds and dying inside devices, and that was inside a whole iPhone lineup, that would be a disaster. So it's far better to scale that slowly until we get to a point where there's a high level of confidence and it can deliver features like millimeter wave, which we just wouldn't have got right out the gates.
Right. That's true. All right. Well, the last thing really is that it's going to have a bigger battery. I mean, we've talked about the efficiencies coming from all aspects. Yeah. I mean, the bigger battery, 5,100, 5,200 milliamp hours, we didn't really say what we were thinking. Apple doesn't really speak in that language. They do the whole like browsing the web and video. For rating. Yeah,
they talk about hours, it's sort of abstract hours of battery
life. How many hours? Bro, you should not be watching 18 hours of video, okay? Can we talk about, like, I guess people probably are watching, like, 18 hours of Instagram reels. I don't know. Like, what can we measure it out in, like, those specific, like, what are the most used apps, you know? You're going to get 12 hours straight of ChatGPT use. Like, I don't know. I feel like we need better real world, or just use the numbers, because at this point, at least for me and people like us who are probably doing more and looking more into this stuff, you kind of understand where 5,000 is going to be. That was kind of like the golden number the last few years.
The reason they don't do that is because the efficiency of the modem and the chip and the display all counts towards that. So if they they could give us a smaller battery but a more efficient chip and a more efficient modem, and it would have longer battery life. So
but do you think 18 hours of video playback helps you realize how long your phone's going to last when you're traveling through the day? And
no, but they don't. It still kind of gives me an idea. I know that if they say, okay, this year's iPhone has 3 hours better battery life than last year, I can kind of understand what that is. I know that it's not actually going to directly give me 3 hours, but it won't be too far off.
No, you just lost camera there.
Well, now we're on the studio display.
It's all right. You look great still. Moral of the story is the iPhone 18 Pro is looking like a pretty decent upgrade. I mean, that red color alone is... I mean, I think if you have the 17, we could probably say right now, just based off of these rumors, you probably don't need to upgrade, correct?
I agree. It's not going to be enough for those people. But I think if you've got a 16 Pro or older, this seems like it will be a significant upgrade. You'll get all the things that we have enjoyed with the iPhone 17 Pro, namely that improved telephoto camera, the new design. I think there's an awful lot to like about the device.
I agree. Let us know in the comments or, you know, hit us up on email, podcast@macrumors.com. Subscribe, do all of those fun things, and we will catch everybody in next week's episode.